right, with all those diverticula. Where do the primordial germ cells come from? They come from the caudal end of the yolk sac, right there. And very, very, very early on, they start migrating, just as another type of cell migrates a lot. Do you remember the cell that is derived from up here? The neural crest cells also migrate great distances. So here's the primordial germ cells. They're migrating along. You can see here the gut tube has developed from this stage to this stage. It's now forming a tube, and it's going through, coming up here, going through this red tissue, which is called the what? The dorsal mesentery from splanchnic mesoderm. And then they either come up here and turn left or turn right. I did that wrong, but that's okay. And they will go into the gonadal ridge. Remember, the gonadal ridges are those areas of thickening of the mesonephros at the caudal end of the mesonephros, the gonadal or the genital ridge. Okay? And then a little higher power here. We're going to talk about that in a slide or two. I forgot to make it dark. And here you can see the germ cells coming into the gonadal ridge right here. What is this, do you think? This is the mesonephric duct, right? And what do you suppose that is? The paramesonephric duct. Very good. Okay, so in the old days, before we didn't know so much information about genes, we used to think that the female gender was the default. That if there wasn't a gene to say, hey, this embryo needs to be male, that the embryo would be female. And one of the first genes that we discovered was called sex-determining region of the Y. Sex-determining region of the Y. And this is a major, major master switch gene that starts a cascade of changes that will direct this embryo to turn into a male. And this gene is located on the short arm of chromosome Y, the sex chromosome. And there it is, right in there somewhere. Where is it? Where the heck is it? It's in there somewhere. Okay. It's almost at the very, very tip of the short arm of Y. And what that is going to do, that gene is going to code for a transcription factor, which is a protein, which is going to tell those primary sex cord cells, which are these guys depicted in black, to turn into Sertoli cells. They're going to differentiate into Sertoli cells. And you may know that where are Sertoli cells? They're right around the germ cells, right? Right around the spermatogonia within the seminiferous tubules, okay? So that's what those are going to turn into. Sertoli cells under TDF is the transcription factor. This is the gene name. Okay. As we go forward, we've learned, and I'm not going to go into these in detail, but we have learned that there are other genes that direct sex differentiation. And we now know that in the female, there are also genes that direct female sex, so that we now know that female is not the fallback if in the lack of differentiating factors from the male. Okay, so a little bit of retreat here. There's the primary sex cord cells. These come from the salomic epithelium. What is the salomic epithelium? They're like mesothelial cells, but very early on. They're the lining cells of the peritoneal cavity. Okay, and that's the coelom. Coelom means cavity. So the primary sex cord cells, there they are, and they're going to come down, and they're going to surround, the Sertoli cells are going to surround the germ cells, okay? And then the Sertoli cells are going to start making their own type of transcription factor, and it is called Mullerian inhibiting factor. And here you need to know that Mullerian equals paramesonephric duct. That's a eponymic term for paramesonephric duct. And what do you suppose this factor does? It's going to inhibit the paramesonephric duct, which is going to form the female genital system, the ductular part of the system. Okay? So the Sertoli cells, via this transcription factor, suppress the Mullerian duct system, initiate now the next level that we need to do is the development of fetal Leydig cells. And will also suppress germ cell mitosis. So as soon as those germ cells get surrounded by those Sertoli cells forming these seminiferous tubules, they're going to get quiescent. No more mitosing. Okay? So you have this two-tier thing. And then the Leydig cells now will, the fetal Leydig cells will produce testosterone. And testosterone will initiate the ductular system of the male genital tract, the vas deferens, the epididymis, and will also, early on and then later, help develop the normal male external genitalia. Okay? And here's the other. Wolfian duct equals mesonephric duct. You might as well just memorize that. These are very, very old terms. This is the more generic term. Okay. Okay, so we're going to look back up a little bit. And remember where the gonad sits right here? Sitting right on this tissue, which was the mesonephros, right? This is mesonephros right here. And remember, we have the mesonephric duct right there. And that became very important right in the development of the kidney to form the ureteric bud that came off the mesonephric duct to go into the kidney. And these little S-tubules that remain in this region are going to help make connections. They are going to make connections between these future seminiferous tubules right here, which are sometimes called medullary cords. And that little connection will be made right there between this S-tubule and the tubules of the medullary cords. How convenient. Okay? And then eventually, the germ cells are going to have an exit out through into the mesonephric duct to become the vas deferens. Okay, the other thing that will happen early on is that the outer surface of the gonad will thicken and become fibrotic and become the tunica albuginea. And another interesting thing that happens that I haven't depicted here or in my handout is that the developing male gonad initiates migration of muscle cells, smooth muscle cells, sort of myoepithelial cells, to come in and surround the medullary cords, because during ejaculation, those muscle cells will contract and squeeze on the seminiferous tubules. That does not happen in the ovary at all. We still don't know what cell exactly is initiating that, but that does happen. There's some theory that the tunica albuginea gets very thick in the male because, I don't know if this is true, but the rest of the baby, remember, is being awash in estrogen. Mom's estrogen can easily pass through the placenta, so the baby is just awash with estrogen, and this may be some way to limit the amount of estrogen that actually diffuses into the testis. I don't think that's been confirmed, but that is a theory. Okay. A little closer up. There's the testis. There's the medullary cords to form the seminiferous tubules. The tubules, again, are loops. They're little loops that all drain in here. Here is the branches of the S-tubule from the mesonephros that's going to make the efferent ductules. Efferent means away, as I'm sure you know, X, efferent. And then part of the testicular cord part will form the reedy testis, which is more inside the testis, as you see here. So here's the paramesonephric duct. What's going to happen to that in the male? It's going to disappear because of Mullerian inhibiting factor. Okay? So, and what's happening to the rest of this mesonephros over here? It's going to go away, right? It's going to basically disappear. All the remnants of it is going to be that interstitial tissue surrounding the ductular system right here. Yep. Okay, and here's the real thing, okay? This is a testis, probably about 18, 19 weeks gestation. Here you can see the beginning of the tunica albuginea. It's probably going to get thicker. Here are the seminiferous tubules, and what is inside the seminiferous tubules? The germ cells and the Sertoli cells, which make tight junctions around themselves, right, to kind of separate the germ cell from the rest of the organ, basically. Yep. And then there are lots and lots of fetal Leydig cells early on. We need it. They're needed early on because there need to be enough of them to make testosterone to have the vas and all the ductular system develop. Okay? And I underline fetal for two reasons. One, because these are going to disappear. And then a new population comes up around puberty. A new population of Leydig cells, and there's a lot of interesting studies going on comparing the physiology of these fetal Leydig cells with the adult Leydig cells, because they are two different cell populations, even though they look the same. Okay. And then this is just such a pretty picture. I had to put that in here. About the same age. It may be the same testis. What is that? That's the epididymis. And where does that come from? Mesonephric duct, at which comes for the mesonephros. So both answers are correct. Very good. That's a tube, right? And it's just highly, highly coiled. There's the epididymis. Excellent. Okay, now I have two slides of this. I was going to get rid of this one because I don't like that anymore. It's too old looking. So I'm going to go to the next one. This is the one I wanted to show you. And I wanted you to change that four to a three. Okay? So you remember in those embryos, those pictures of the early embryos, that the gonad is pretty high up, isn't it? It's sort of up posterior wall, and it needs to come down. It needs to come down into the scrotum. We used to think that the main cause of getting the scrotum down, I mean, getting the testis down into the scrotum, was the gubernaculum, which is the caudal inguinal ligament of the mesonephros. You can kind of see that, the mesonephros kind of extended up and down the whole embryo, and the caudal end sort of becomes a ligament as it's involuting. Okay, and we used to think that this gubernaculum literally pulled down the testis. Well, that is not entirely true. Studies have, you know, come in rat embryos and cut the gubernaculum, and the testis kind of comes down pretty well without that influence. We do know it is under the influence of INSL3, and there's probably other genes because there are mutant mice where that gene is mutated and lack of descent occurs. And also, we think that the regression of the cranial suspensory ligament, which is the mesonephros tissue kind of connected to the diaphragm. Well, we never knew that. I mean, I never told you that, but there's that mesonephros goes all the way up. That part of the top, which kind of was tethering the testis, is no longer there, allows the testis to come down. And some people think that also the relative, you know, the relative growth or regression of organs causes movement with relation of one organ in relation to other organs as the embryo is developing, which would go under that sort of explanation. So the descent of the testis, a lot of factors. That's the main point here. Okay? And here you can see not very accurately depicted. I've never seen a fetus where the testis is that big. So that you just make that a little smaller, okay? All right. And there it comes down into the scrotum. Most of the time they're down by about 6-7 weeks gestation. Sometimes it can be, sometimes they don't descend completely until, you know, early childhood. Now remember, the testis starts out as a retroperitoneal organ, right? The mesonephros is retroperitoneal, the kidney is retroperitoneal, and here it's coming down, there's the little gubernaculum right there. It's gonna come down in front of the symphysis pubis, right there. Okay, and it brings a little bit of fold of the peritoneal cavity, right? And then that fold comes down with the testis, and then that little channel should obliterate. Okay, and then that we have then is the tunica vaginalis, right? And what happens if that stays open? What can happen if that channel coming down into the scrotum stays open? You get a what? A cyst, you could get a cyst. A hydrocele, a good, yes, you get a hydrocele. Well, if it stays open, it probably isn't a hydrocele. But if it closes and it undergoes cystic change, too much fluid in there, it'll become a hydrocele. What lives in here? What lives in here? Anatomy, just regular abdominal anatomy. Intestines, very good. And so what can happen? Those intestines can come down, you get an inguinal hernia. Okay? Very good. Okay. Cryptorchidism. One time many years ago, one of our exam questions for the medical students was how to spell this word correctly. Okay? What is cryptorchidism? Lack of testicular descent. This is an old picture, but a little bit fairly informative. Okay, the majority of them will get hung up in the inguinal canal, and the upper scrotum, that area right about there, okay? And if they stay there, it's a problem. Because you can see over the course of 5 years, the number of germ cells that will undergo apoptosis is pretty immense. So that by 5 years in a cryptorchid kidney, a cryptorchid testis, there are probably no functioning germ cells anymore. And with that, after five, the increase of germ cells tumors, like embryonal carcinomas, seminomas, especially embryonals, will happen. So it's important to get the testis in the scrotum. Surgeons, I don't think, really start worrying about it until about 6 months or so of age, and maybe some as late as 1 year of age. So that is cryptorchidism. Okay, so a little bit of review. This is kind of an odd view. We'll see this again when we talk about the female reproductive system. Here's the testis. There's the mesonephric duct, and it's coming into the back of the bladder. Now, really, I shouldn't call it a bladder there. I should still call it a urogenital sinus, but it's going to be eventually the bladder, okay? Here's the paramesonephric duct. It's going to disappear. We've talked about that. Okay. Now, we've got to talk about remnants. Now, here, the testis has descended. Okay, this is my feeble attempt at drawing the bladder, okay? And this is half of the bladder. This is one half of the bladder. The other half is over here. These are interesting remnants. Let's start with this one, the appendix testis. The appendix testis. I don't know if you saw this. It's a tiny little polypoid thing that is right at the cranial portion of the testis. Usually what I see them, they're a little bit more up here. And that is the remnant of the paramesonephric duct. The very tip of it. And if you look at it histologically, the paramesonephric duct is going to form the fallopian tubes, for one thing. And that will look like the end of a fallopian tube. And what can happen is, if that's fairly sizable, sometimes it can torse. And with torsion, arterial blood keeps getting in there. Venous blood can't get out. You got a venous infarction. You got an otherwise healthy guy who's coming to the emergency room with severe pinpoint scrotal pain. That is a classic presentation for a torsed appendix testis. Okay. Then, off the epididymis is called an appendix, because it's off of something. Off of the epididymis is called the appendix epididymis, and that's the distal end of the mesonephric duct. And that is usually pretty small. It's usually more broad-based, and it doesn't tend to torse and cause clinical problems. And then, if you look at the prostatic urethra, and you see a little elongated midline ridge, that is the prostatic utricle, and you could say, ah, that's the uterus if this had been a female, which I'll talk about later, obviously. So that's the prostatic utricle. I don't know if they see that, do they? That was the answer. Right down the midline. Okay. Okay. So there you go. Okay. What can I already talked about that? Okay. All right, now we're getting towards the end, literally, of the male reproductive system. Let's talk about the prostate. This is kind of simple. Here's the bladder, okay? Here's the rectum. What was in between here? Urorectal septum. Remember that? What's this right here? Very good. Which came off the, yes, was started out as the ureteric bud? Is that what you said? Which came off the mesonephric duct. Absolutely. Here's the mesonephric duct, and the seminal vesicles come off the mesonephric duct right there, which is now the vas. The prostate, the glands of the prostate are basically derivatives of that endoderm epithelium. Okay? Question. What's the interstitial tissue and muscle around the prostate? Where's that from? Yes, splanchnic lateral plate mesoderm. Very good. Excellent. Okay. Super duper duper. Spermatogenesis begins at puberty. And there it is. And that's all I'm going to say. Okay? Okay, now we have to differentiate the external genitalia. And the external genitalia remain indifferent. I love that term. until about 6 weeks of gestation. And after that, there's enough hormonal difference, TDF, testosterone, and so you'll see the divergence. I mean, actually 12 weeks. You can tell by external genitalia. 6 weeks, you can tell by looking at the gonad itself. But the external genitalia, the fetus has to be at least 12 weeks. So here's the basis, the template right here. Okay? So here is the genital tubercle. Here is the opening, the membrane of the cloaca. Remember what a cloaca is? It receives from three organ systems, GI, urinary, and reproductive. Okay? And there is the cloacal fold, sometimes called the urethral fold, as over right here. And then as soon as the anus separates, okay, now we call that the urogenital membrane here, because right in there is the urogenital sinus. Kidney and reproductive still. We haven't separated those two yet. Okay? So, here is the real thing. I think there's the anal pit right there. There's the genital tubercle, urethral folds. And what happens after that? Well, what happens in the male, basically, is that these urethral folds are going to zip up, close, midline, and basically zip up to the tip, okay? And then these structures right here, the genital swellings, are going to move posteriorly and come together back here to form the scrotum. Okay? And then the all-important thing that has to happen is the ectoderm and the endoderm, where they're meeting right at the tip of the penis, they have to say, okay, we got to have some apoptosis going on so we have an opening. Okay? And so you have canalization of the opening, and then you finally have a system that opens to the outside. Okay? And then the other thing that happens in the male is obviously the genital tubercle, which is this guy, is going to elongate to form the shaft of the penis. What happens when this doesn't completely happen, when the urethral folds don't fused together, you can see hypospadias of the penile urethra. The penile urethra is here, the prostatic urethra surrounded by the prostate. Okay? Now, lots of times in the OB department, when they have to deliver miscarriage specimens or young terminations, they will often missex the fetus. They'll say, well, I see a phallus, I think. And I see an opening, but the phallus looks kind of big. Or actually, they just see a phallus. They say it's a male. So they tell the parents it's a male. And then the baby comes to, or the fetus comes to pathology, and it turns out that it's not a male. It's a female, because what we basically look for is we look for the lack of the fusion of the urethral folds. Okay? And certainly, female is more common than hypospadias. Okay. So here, basically urine would come out mid-shaft, obviously. All right. Okay, so this is, we're coming to the end of the male reproductive system. And now you know where all these things come from. Where does the testis come from? Boy, am I going fast. Holy moly. Where does the testis come from? Open book quiz. Open book. I don't see a single book in this whole room. Okay. Huh? What germ layer does it come from? You could say two parts, couldn't you? Right? You could say mesoderm, all right, intermediate mesoderm, phloemic epithelium, and the gut tube. All right? So maybe three germ layers. Where does the vas deferens come from? Mesonephric duct, which is from the mesonephros, which is what kind of mesoderm? Intermediate mesoderm. Very good. Same with the seminal vesicle. Where do the glands of the prostate come from? Endoderm. Excellent. And the fibromuscular tissue of the prostate? Splanchnic mesoderm. Very good. Okay. So, that is that. Any questions? Next question. Where are we? Very good. Any questions about male reproductive? Isn't that gorgeous? All right, I have to get up the next lecture. I know how to do this. This? Is this? Something I didn't see it anymore. Oh, it's over there. Okay. Okay, female reproductive system. No falling asleep. Okay. Who's that? Okay. Venus. Okay, here we are again. Here we are again around 5.5-6 weeks. You're about this big. Here come the germ cells. You can tell the ones that Dr. Waters put in right there. Coming in, dorsal mesentery from the yolk sac, coming into the gonadal ridge. Here you got the template. Everything else is there. Mesonephros functioning, right? Remember that mesonephros produces filtrate up until about 9 weeks gestation. So that is a kidney that's functioning for about 4 or 5 weeks. Okay. So the primary sex cord cells from the salomic epithelium descend into the gonadal ridge just like in the male, but because of these different master switch genes turning on and no TDF, okay, these sex cord cells are going to involute. They're just going to go away. Okay, so that first wave of salomic epithelium going into the gonad, the huge majority of them will disappear. Okay? Then what will happen, there will be a new wave of cells coming from the salomic epithelium descending in, and this time they're going to surround germ cells. And during this time, which I'm going to mention later, these germ cells are mitosing and apoptosing like crazy. I mean, it's just a very, very busy organ at this time. But as soon as these secondary sex cord cells surround a mitosing germ cell, those cells are going to send messages to tell that germ cell to stop mitosing and go into meiosis one, actually. But we're going to talk more about that later, okay? So here you are. You can see now these are the primordial follicles right here, okay? There's the paramesonephric duct. That is not going to disappear in the female because we don't have a Y chromosome, so we don't have any TDF, okay? And the mesonephric duct in the female is not as important, not nearly as important. After it had the ureteric bud come off of it, don't need it anymore. So this is going to involute, but little ductular structures may remain. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay? And the other change is there's no attraction of myoid cells into the ovary because we don't need any muscle function in the ovary whatsoever. And also the surface will thin down, get quite thin. Why does it need to be thin? Well, think about what has to happen later. These germ cells have to pop out of the surface. Okay. Okay. So we're going to leave the ovary right now, and we're going to go to the fallopian tubes and the uterus. Go back to this picture. Okay. Here's the mesonephros, gonadal ridge. Everything is richly labeled here. Okay. And you can see that here. And also, you can see, because I think I got another slide to emphasize this, but you see where the paramesonephric duct, the red ones, you see how they're coming in and attaching to the back of the future urogenital sinus. You see how it's coming in, attaching on the back, just as the mesonephric ducts did, just as the ureters are in the adult situation. Okay? So, what is going to happen? Well, basically, these two paramesonephric ducts close to the urogenital sinus are going to fuse together like that. And what do you suppose they're going to make? A uterus. Yes, right. Okay. So here's my Superman view again. Okay, dorsals on the top, embryos coming out at you. Here are the gonadal ridges, right here, ovaries forming here. There's a little bit of mesonephros that's going to go away. So this fusion, this part, paramesonephric duct is going to come over. It's going to come over here, and it's going to bring that sort of posterior lateral wall with it. And they're going to fuse together. And what are they going to form? They're going to form the broad ligament and begin to partition the pelvis away from the abdominal cavity. Okay? And notice also, because of that movement, notice where the ovaries face in the pelvis. They face backward. And now you understand why. Okay? Because of that movement of the paramesonephric ducts. So they come together and they fuse, and there it is right there, and there is my depiction of the urogenital sinus where they're going to connect right in the back. Okay. What is that? Yes, very good. Notochord, which stimulated the neural tube. Very good. Got to dig back there a little bit. Excellent. Okay. So now what we're going to do, same picture, but now we're going to go and look really close right here. We're going to look at the back of the bladder and see what this fused distal or proximal, depending on how you look at it, paramesonephric ducts are doing. And here it is. It's kind of stylized, kind of a lot of other information is taken out of here. But here's the back of the urogenital sinus right here. Okay? Here are the two paramesonephric ducts fusing together, so the medial walls will involute, go away. Okay? And then an interesting interaction happens between endoderm and mesoderm here. It's happened in multiple organs before. It happened in the lung, the interaction between endoderm and mesoderm. And now we're going to talk about right here. Okay? Should I mention that? No, I don't think of it. Okay, so that is called the sino-vaginal bulb. That's one of my more favorite terms. I don't know why, but it is. Sino-vaginal bulb. It's of endodermal origin. And I love this picture. Okay? I mean, what is this face? I mean, whatever. But this is the symphysis pubis. Okay? Here's the soon-to-be bladder, which is pretty close to being there already. And this is looking at that same interaction from the side. Here you see this endoderm right here, sinovaginal bulb. Here you see the fused paramesonephric ducts coming in. Now, if they don't fuse and they both attach to the back of the bladder, each of them will initiate a sinovaginal bulb, which will be important later when I show you a anomaly. Okay, so what is going to happen is this sinovaginal bulb is going to elongate and then canalize like this. It's going to elongate, form a lumen, and the other thing it does is it slides down. That's the only verb I can use. It slides down the back of the urethra and the bladder down here to have its opening out on the skin. And there we go from having a urogenital sinus to having a urinary tract and a genital tract. They have separate. We've gone from cloaca to urogenital sinus to the three separate orifices. 1, 2, 3. Okay, so you see how that comes down. Now, this is of interest so that you now realize that the vagina, the distal third of the vagina, is mesonephric. And mesodermal, if we want to go back. It's a mesodermal origin, but the distal two-thirds of the vagina are endodermal in origin. Okay. So, a couple of clinical entities here. Gartner's duct cysts. What the heck are Gartner's duct cysts? Why, actually, I inserted the word duct there. These are remnants of the mesonephric duct. And they can be found anywhere where the mesonephric duct was. They can be up here by the fallopian tubes. They can be alongside the uterus. They can be very, very distal, as in this woman, where you can see she has a very, very distal Gartner's duct cyst, which is, you know, kind of unsightly and probably uncomfortable for, you know. These are entirely benign. Here you could see where they might be anywhere along here. And I remember many years ago, we had a woman who had a very unusual adenocarcinoma that arose somewhere in her pelvis. Couldn't say that it came from, you know, the tubes, ovaries, or uterus, anywhere, but it was because it was outside of the uterus. It was lateral, and we really think that it was probably a malignant degeneration of one of these Gartner's ducts. So you can see those anywhere along the course of the paramesonephric duct, Gartner's duct cysts. And this is basically a paratubal cyst, which is the same phenomenon happening in a different part of the mesonephric duct, way out at the tip near the fallopian tubes. Paratubal cysts, remnants of the mesonephric duct, accumulate fluid and form cysts. These are extremely common. Probably at least half of the women in here have these. Okay, and then we have to talk about the, remember the gubernaculum in the male? Well, the gubernaculum in the male does have a counterpart in the female, and it is the round ligament and the tubo-ovarian ligament. Right there, there's the gubernaculum in the female. All right, and there would be, because of its location, we could call that right there, that little guy, a Gartner's duct cyst. All right, excellent. Okay, development of the external genitalia of the female. And here in this picture, this is a nice comparison because you see male and female happening at the same time. Here is the indifferent stage, lasts until about 12 weeks, okay? That we have the anus separated because of that urogenital septum right in between. Then we've got the urogenital sinus right there. And then basically in the male, the urethral folds are going to zip up. Phallus is going to lengthen. Gonadal swellings, here they're called genital swellings, are going to move posteriorly. In the female, the urethral folds stay open. And the genital swellings stay where they are. Okay? So the urethral folds are the definitive labia minora, and the genital swellings are the labia majora. So the male counterpart of the genital swellings is the scrotum. Those genital swellings move posterior. Okay. What happens if the sino-vaginal bulb fails to canalize and open into the fused mesonephric ducts? Remember, this is mesoderm, this is endoderm, just like the tip of the phallus, just like the anus, like the mouth, the two germ layers have to come together, then they have to apoptose to make an opening. Okay, what happens if that doesn't happen? No problems until menses begin, and then the woman is going to have menses, the blood is going to accumulate in the uterus, the upper vagina, right? That's mesodermal. And can even back up into the fallopian tubes. Hematocolpos, meaning it's in the cervical area, hematometria in the uterus, hematosalpinx in the fallopian tube. All right. Here is a great example of a problem with the paramesonephric ducts joining with the back of the bladder. This is... What are these right here? Ovaries. And what is that right there? Cysts. Yeah, it's a paratubal cyst. Very good. And what do we have? We've got two lumens. We've got two uteri. And actually, we have not the entire length, but maybe about half the length, we have two vaginas. So here, what happens, those paramesonephric ducts didn't fully fuse, you know, in the region where there's... you know, just behind the urogenital sinus or the ventral bladder. Okay? It's called uterus didelphus. Uterus didelphus. And there's Thiemann variations. Here's my Thiemann variation slide of incomplete fusion. Here is what we just looked at right here. Here is uterus arcuatus where that medial tissue right here failed to involute. That's kind of mild and we don't really make that diagnosis very often. Uterus bicornis, you got one vagina but two uterine cavities. And here in this situation, what happened here on the left is this part of the paramesonephric duct is extant and was there, but the rest just completely involuted. Okay? Atresia of the cervix, I have not seen that, or atresia of the vagina in that situation. This is very, very common, and this is very common. Okay? These can be pose fertility problems, and also conception problems, fertility problems, not so much as the zygote getting down in here, but, you know, is there enough room there for the embryo to develop to term? That's usually the problem. Okay. All right, now we take a big breath. And now we have to talk about oogenesis. Because now we've got to talk about a lot of big numbers and a lot of steps. Yes?
I have a question about the Delphus.
Uh-huh, so uterus di Delphus.
Do you know that that's a problem before you would consider assigning to the child?
That was a problem. Well, not with uterus di... Oh. Yep.
Where, like, that second uterus on the right is kind of
close. The second uterus on the right. Right here. D.
Yeah.
Okay, well, would this uterus ever see any sperm?
I'm talking about menses, though.
Yes. Yes, then you're answering. Yes, you're absolutely right. You get hematometra.
So
yes, you would.
Well,
eventually you would, yes, because menstruation is going to be happening there, bleeding is going to happen, yeah, and eventually that blood is going to come out into the peritoneal cavity via the fallopian tube, and blood is very irritating to the peritoneum. I don't know if you learned about endometriosis, but it's very, very irritating. So, yes, soon, within several cycles or maybe a year or so of cycling, the woman would probably have problems, have pain, have abdominal pain, have dyspareunia. Yep. Any other questions? Sure. You are absolutely right. Good job. Good job. Good job, good job, good job. You know, I've looked at that slide, and I've actually showed this to about 10, 15, or I don't know, 20 classes of medical students, and you're the first person to notice that, so congratulations. Okay. Oogenesis. Around 5 to 6 weeks, the germ cells arrive in the gonadal ridge. And whether you're male or female, that's going to tell you what those solomic epithelial, those sex cord cells are going to do. And that's why within 6 weeks you can tell a testis from a ovary. They're going to, sex cord cells are going to descend in the gonadal ridge. They're going to disappear. And then the secondary ones are going to descend in the gonadal ridge and surround those germ cells. And notice that for a good long time, from about 6 to 26 weeks, 27 weeks, those germ cells are mitosing and apoptosing, so they're proliferating and dying and proliferating and dying. It's a lot like what's happening in the thymus, too. There's a lot of that proliferation and dying off that is going on. So the ovary is very busy in utero during gestation, okay? The testis is very quiescent during gestation. So once the germ cells are entrapped by the secondary sex cord cells, they are going to be told to no longer mitose and go into prophase of meiosis I. Okay? And there they could sit for 40 years. Four chromatids there all crossing together, getting all that genetic variation. Okay? And as soon as that germ cell goes into meiosis, we call it an oocyte. This is a basic understanding that you should carry with you. Oogonia and spermatogonia are germ cells in mitosis. Oocytes and spermatocytes are germ cells in meiosis. Okay? Okay, so here they sit in meiosis one for could be a long, long time. Okay, and this is where they sit, right here, meiosis one. You can see where all the crossover can happen. And they're frozen right here. Okay? Then, about the time when that primary oocyte, if it's the chosen one for that month, gets to the surface and pops and opens up, freeing the cell from this follicle, the germ cell, the oocyte, will finish meiosis one and go into meiosis two around that same time. Okay? So that is what I just described. Okay? So we get the secondary... Okay, so we're right here. Okay? So now you got that oocyte. It's floating around. It's going down the fallopian tube. Finally, a sperm meets it. And when the pronucleus of the sperm enters the cell of the secondary oocyte, the primary oocyte, that oocyte will finish meiosis two, okay, and become a mature oocyte. And then it will immediately fuse with the DNA or the nucleus of the sperm. Now, in embryologic terms, in embryology knowledge, an egg is a haploid cell, okay? A chicken egg is a haploid cell. This is our haploid cell. In human reproduction, the egg phase is literally minutes long, okay? So when you're talking about human embryology, don't use the word egg. Use oocytes, primary oocytes or secondary oocytes, because this is an egg, and it has a very short life. It is immediately fused with the nucleus of the sperm. Okay, so this is what happens in fertilization. The centromeres split. Now you have the oocytes fully ready to receive that other component of the genome. Okay, so that happens at fertilization. Here is the real thing. This is a gonad. Now, this one supposedly was about 6 to 7 weeks. We got this from a miscarriage specimen. First of all, what do you think these are? No, for not primordial. What color are they? Red cells. Absolutely, red cells. Early on, until about 4 or 5 weeks, these will stay nucleated. So if this is a 4 or 5 week gonad, then we don't know what that is yet. You don't know if that's an ovary or a testis. But what do you think that is? Yes, and what is that little structure that has a funny septum down the middle of it? Does it look at all familiar to something that you saw maybe last week or the week before? A glomerulus, absolutely. That's a glomerulus. So what are you looking at right there? You're looking at mesonephros. They're really, it's not the definitive kidney, but it's the embryonic kidney, absolutely. And that's where the gonadal ridge sits. It sits right on top of the mesonephros. That's always fun to see that. Okay. Here it is a little bit later. This is at 19 weeks gestation, and it's a mess in there. You can't see anything. One thing you don't see is you don't see medullary cords. You don't see seminiferous tubules. This is an ovary. So a lot of big, huge cells. These are either our mitoses right there, or they're apoptotic cells, but just really, really, really busy. Excuse me? It does kind of look like a cancer. Absolutely. All right. And then later, 27 weeks about, now we're beginning to see these oocytes right here. I have a better picture coming up, but this is often as good as you get. The formalin causes this artifactual separation here. But you see these big cells right here, right there, right there, right there. You see how big the nuclei are? Why are they so big? Why are they so dark? Because you got two chromatids for each chromosome. You got 4 N there. So you got a lot of chromatin material. It's going to look dark, and the nucleus is going to look big. So those are in meiosis one, prophase of meiosis one. These little guys right here are probably still oogonia. There's probably still mitosing. They haven't been surrounded by, captured by the sex cord cells. Okay, and a lot later on, this is 10 months postpartum, and here you can see the primordial follicles right there, right there, right there, still big, still crossing over. Okay? Note the stroma of the ovary. This is from the sex cord cells, and a little bit of mesodermal, mesonephric tissue too, because remember the gonadal ridge comes from the mesonephros. Okay, and there's just a gorgeous follicle. I think you've seen those. Very pretty. These are the granulosa cells, sex cord cells. And there is that oocyte just waiting for the moment to pop out. Okay, gorgeous. Incredible attrition of germ cells during oogenesis. Same thing with the male, okay? Each ovary, we estimate, has 7 million oogonia. That's a lot of oogonia. Only about 480 of them are going to get to the secondary oocyte because we're talking about ovulations, 12 ovulations a year times maybe 40 years, plus or minus a good number. So only about 480 of those are ever going to get to secondary oocytes. And then mature oocytes for that very short evanescent period, maybe 1 to 10 to 12, whatever. So this huge, huge attrition of the germ cells with oogenesis. Okay. And then what happens? Fertilization happens. You get the fusion. Remember? And then you get the compaction where the cells assume maximum contact with each other. And we get a morula. And what is this little guy called? Blastocyst. And then we start the whole thing over. Now, Dr. Black said that I could use the next 3 hours to quickly go through all the other lectures again. Okay? No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So there it is, the beautiful blastocyst, and that is the end. And where is that? You got it. Okay. Any questions? Yes? Excuse me? Go to cell. What happens to the polar bodies? Well, they're depicted here. They just get pushed off to the side. Yep, they just get pushed off to the side. Normally, yep. Yes? Yes. Yes. Okay, good luck on your finals, and see you on the floors pretty soon, huh? Okay, have a good Christmas. Did he leave? Okay, I'm leaving.
right? Isn't that what you're looking for?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I used this one. Or...
And I don't know, are you a pacer?
No.
Is he on here? So you'll be able to work everything remotely from here.
Uh-huh.
So east is forward, west is backwards, and then you have a pointer.
I check north.
Oh, okay. So just if you're going to kind of be on this side of the room,
yes.
I recommend putting this on this side.
Oh, okay.
So it'll pick up as you're turning, because usually you're trying to look at this. You know, so that one doesn't matter, but this one, the left lapel better than the right.
Sounds good.
And from here you can see your next line.
Yes,
on this view.
I like it.
And I'll turn down the slide. I'll turn down the lights for a minute.
This shouldn't be high enough, right?
Probably not. I'm going to want to put it up pretty close there. And then we'll just check. We'll just do a volume check with people in the back.
Sure.
And do you teach some of the custodians? So some of them will go
continue? No. Because we're not pathology, we're radiology. And okay, that should be good, huh?
Wait for the clock to trip.
Yeah. Also, just to let you know, thank you for having uploaded my slide. I actually dumped it because I have another version that I'm which has, it's got a lot, it's just got more writing on it.
Okay.
So that's what I'll do. And I can give you the other one back later.
Okay, and we can repost that. Okay. Yeah, so if you send that to me or
we'll do the file transfer, right? Yeah, exactly. Because this one is actually like 3 times the size just because of imaging.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you'll see there's some cine images that are nice to look at, but doesn't make sense when you transfer.
Well, they're running off of here anyway. So this is what they have. So this is what they have posted. What you sent me is what they have access to. Right now.
Great. Uh-huh.
So if you want to send me a different version of that, I can post that.
Oh yeah, no, this is the one I gave you earlier will be fine.
Okay, let's get started. I'd like to introduce Dr. Judy Kim from the Department of Radiology, who's going to talk to us today about imaging of the abdomen and pelvis, and I'll turn down the lights. People in the back, can we just do a quick volume check before I leave her up here?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Is that good? Louder? Good.
Nice. Great. Well, I wanted to, this is really quite exciting to have you guys see.